How's that?
Oh,
for sure. Yeah, that's a bit much. Yeah. So, Mark came up to me before and asked, what am I exhorting on? And I said, well, it's going to be another contentious exhortation. But this is a more of a long-term contentious exhortation. So it's going to be quite peculiar. I've had the same thoughts going round and round in my head for a couple of years now. I've never given an exhortation on the topic, and possibly for good reason. Certainly not everyone is going to agree with me. In fact, nobody may agree with me, and I'm okay with that. Being encouraged by something that you may disagree with is a tall ask. But as this is all that's been going round and round in my head, it's all I can exhort on at the moment. I'll also preface it with the disclaimer that I don't know all the answers, and you will be able to come up with questions that I don't have a satisfactory answer to. The reverse is probably true as well, so the playing field is even. I'm not going to be able to do the topic due justice either. You'd be very disappointed if I was to last several hours up here, or several days, and we don't have Paul here to resurrect if anyone was to fall from their chair and break their neck. So the genesis of my conundrum is probably the phrase, I am blessed, or we're so blessed, or you're so blessed. It's related to the question, why does God allow suffering? It's fundamental to one's expectations in life. For many, it will be automatic and the inconsistencies may not have come to the surface. It may be a misappropriation of a scriptural quote. For some, they will think that everybody thinks the same as they do. It could have the same beginnings as the Jesus as postman idea that I've touched on previously, in that the language that we use on the topic has nuances that we haven't really explained. And so I'd better explain what it is. So from my perspective, God doesn't work in our individual lives in the 21st century. But what about this verse, or what about that verse, I hear you say. And as I said before, I don't have all the answers. Several weeks ago now, because I wrote this a month ago, Brother Gordon exhorted for us, and he talked about a logic train and a faith train. And he said that at some point you get off the logic train and you move onto the faith train. But I disagreed with him on that and talked about it to him afterwards. In my head, we get off the evidence train and get onto the faith train. But God's message is inherently logical, so I don't think we ever get off the logic train. And my logic, I think, is fairly simple. What is in it for God? Possibly, however, I'm getting ahead of myself. What I'm scared of, I suppose, is that the belief that God works in your life is potentially cause for one to lose faith if things don't work out for you. On the other hand, my belief may pull the rug out from other people's feet. So I believe that God hasn't directly intervened in individual lives since the Bible was effectively completed. Most are happy to accept that the Spirit gifts were no longer passed on once the apostles died, and so I believe it was with direct intervention. After all, God hasn't asked for robots. If that was what he wanted, that is what he would have created. What he's asked for is for each of us to make a choice and to continue choosing. I don't believe that God treats a person differently after that they have chosen to follow his son. I believe we're all supposed to work together to create an environment where making the right choice is easier. And I believe we're promised a reward once this life is finished, whether that is death or the establishment of the kingdom. Now for me, that was quite a lot of talking and not a lot of Bible. So I'm going to rectify that for a moment, use an example from around 6 months ago. So let's look at 1 Peter chapter 3 and verses 8 to 12. Now, I was at home for some reason, and this passage had come up on a Sunday morning. So Liz messaged me and asked for an explanation. So 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8. Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrariwise blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil, and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. Now, on the face of it, it could well mean that God is acting now. But there are two reasons why I don't think this is true. Firstly, Peter talks about inheritance. We are called, he says, so that we can receive a reward. And secondly, if that reward was now, then surely more would choose to follow Jesus now. If following Jesus meant God helped you in your life, then surely everyone would be doing it. These verses, however, are reminding us how to live now, that we may have a life to come. I paraphrased it at the time as, turn the other cheek. Don't attribute to malice what can easily be attributed to stupidity. That is, think the best of others and their intentions. And in the long run, you will hear the words, well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of your Lord. Now, one counter-argument is, of course, that this is limiting the power of God. But that is not true. He is very much capable of doing so. But as I asked before, what is in it for God? The related issue for me is that if you need to influence one person, you're going to have to control another person in order to exert that influence. And that doesn't make sense to me on a grand scale. In fact, it's unusual in Scripture, full stop. We read in Acts 9 the account of Saul's conversion, and we see God wanting to heal him and send him a message. But he doesn't control Ananias. He appears to Ananias in a vision and gives him some instructions, which he chooses to follow. And it wasn't without hesitation. Ananias' initial response was, I've heard about him, insinuating that this is not a good plan. However, God tells Ananias that Paul is now chosen, and Ananias chooses to follow God's command. This is also for me the answer to why does God allow suffering? He has set a plan in motion. He's not controlling every individual action, if indeed any. And mankind has really stuffed it up. If we're talking about starving people, and if we're talking about natural disasters, then the natural processes of the earth must continue. There are many, including in this room, who feel that God has intervened in their lives because things worked out either as they had prayed for or because something went right against all the odds. Psychologically, though, that is not a difficult problem. Now, I'm going to use the word luck here as a proxy, but I think in the context it's reasonably analogous. So back in September, I was listening to Radio New Zealand on the way into the meeting, and Jim Moyer was interviewing a British chap called Richard Wiseman, who is a professor, a magician, and a psychologist. The title of the program was Why Magic Should Be Taught in Schools. But there ended up being only a small section of the 30 minutes on that topic. Now, Richard had previously written books called The Luck Factor, The Little Book of Luck, and has done multiple studies on the topic, including some long-term studies on those who class themselves as lucky and those who don't. He concluded that the split of events that happened to the lucky and the unlucky cohorts were the same, but the attitude of those who classed themselves as lucky were more likely to be A, more resilient to the bad things, and B, take advantage of the situations that presented themselves. One of the most important traits in determining whether someone thought themselves lucky or unlucky was about how extroverted they were, and prior to the advent of social media, this was an indicator of how large a social circle someone had, and therefore who had help to deal with bad situations that present themselves, and also to increase the number of positive situations that come someone's way. For me, this shows the importance of community. It is not good for man to be alone isn't just a maxim for marriage. Having a group of people around you who can help both physically and mentally is very important, and it should also provide a better reflection of Jesus to those around us. Wherever two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst of them means this to me. In a group of believers, you will find that I'm a poor reflection of God, X is a different poor reflection of God, and Y is yet another flawed reflection of God. However, for the most part, as a group, they will be better reflection of God because the group will moderate the bad in each of the individuals, thus presenting a better image. The whole will be more than the sum of its parts. 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 15. If the foot shall say, because I am not the hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear shall say, because I am not the eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where were the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where were the smelling? But now hath God set the members, every one of them in the body, as it hath pleased him. And if they were all one member, where were the body? God is able to see something of the traits he wants in all of us, and it is good that we work together to increase the good traits in each other. And so I've got to this point, and you may well be thinking, where is the encouragement in this for me? And it's a fair question. And although I will maintain that that last section was an encouragement to continuous improvement, or in the words of Brother Andrew, good, better, best, there is encouragement to be found in knowing that people can have different opinions and still reach the same conclusions and be striving for the same goal. It is important that we can each understand differing points of view, especially in an environment where it appears that division and polarization are only increasing. The main encouragement is that we do have a hope. For some, the outlook appears pretty bleak at the moment, and I encourage you to remember Paul's words to the Romans, in chapter 8 and verse 18. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. God's plan for the earth is sure, and the mechanisms to allow us to participate were to put in place 2,000 years ago. It is that we come to remember each week, to remind ourselves that we have an example to follow, and to encourage each other to stay the course, to remind us that there is a hope set before us. Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 17. That Christ may dwell in your hearts by faith, that ye, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the breadth and length and depth and height, and to know the love of Christ which passeth knowledge, that ye might be filled with all the fullness of God. And so, as we partake of these emblems before us, let us remember that it is this fellowship we have together which helps us to be a better reflection of the character of God, and that we are not alone.